Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. Same-sex marriage becomes legal in Rhode Island today. State Registrar Colleen Fontana says city and town clerks are braced for an onslaught of applicants, but have no idea how many people will actually show up to apply for marriage licenses. There's some anxiety, she says, in city and town halls. The clerks will be overwhelmed by business.
The thing is, you have a staff to handle your normal business as usual. And I'm not sure it's so easy to accommodate for the influx of number of marriage applicants at one time.
Fontana says on a typical day, it takes no more than half an hour to get a marriage license in Rhode Island, and it can be used right away to tie the knot. As same-sex marriage becomes legal today, Rhode Island State Representative Frank Ferry and his longtime partner are among those planning to mark the day by tying the knot. As Rhode Island Public Radio's John Bender reports, it took almost 20 years to legalize same-sex marriage in the Ocean State.
Ferry and his partner Tony Caparco plan to marry in Warwick this evening with about 300 friends and family members on hand. House Speaker Gordon Fox will perform the ceremony. Ferry, a Warwick Democrat, says the newfound ability of gays and lesbians to marry in Rhode Island will lend special meaning to the nuptials.
This is more than just a wedding for Tony and I. It's a celebration of all the hard work, all the education, all the time, the years that people have spent working on this. And that's how we want to celebrate it.
Due to a health scare in 2006, Ferry and Caparco had an impromptu marriage in Canada as a way of protecting their business and property. But Ferry says the couple always wanted to get married in Rhode Island. John Bender, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Opponents of same-sex marriage say the new law is bad for families. Christopher Plant is the executive director of the Rhode Island chapter with the National Organization for Marriage. He says the same-sex marriage law will affect future children in the Ocean State.
Our state has chosen to codify into law the concept that a child does not need a mom and a dad. By saying marriage can be any two people, we are saying that mothers or fathers are optional.
A new same-sex marriage law also takes effect today in Minnesota, bringing the total number of states allowing gay marriage to 13. And a Rhode Island man at the center of a capital punishment battle between the state and federal government has changed his plea to guilty to avoid the death penalty. Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick was in federal district court yesterday when Jason Plew entered the plea.
Jason Plew wore khaki-colored prison clothes to court. Answering in yeses and noes, he indicated he understood that a guilty plea meant he would spend the rest of his life in prison. Plew admitted conspiring with two other men to rob Woonsocket gas station manager David Main as he was about to make a deposit. Plew grabbed Main's deposit bag and shot him in the head. Main died later at Rhode Island Hospital. The victim's sisters fought back tears in court as their brother's ordeal was recounted. Later, outside court, Main's sister Heather Hitchin said she was satisfied with the outcome of the case.
Well, he's going away for life and he'll be in there forever, so that's it. He won't
and
harm anybody
over.
Else.
And
so, you know, we can try to find some closure.
Plew will be sentenced October 25th, but the sentence is already preordained. Life in prison without the possibility of parole. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Ah, yes. The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar. Most of us remember that lyric. And you know, when Annie, after trying out at the Goodspeed Opera House, opened on Broadway in 1977, it definitely earned a lot more than a buck. With its bouncy music and improbable but oh-so-charming, very American narrative, the show was up for 18 Tony Awards and won 14, including Best Musical. It then traveled from Boston to Bangkok as Annie and her dog Sandy and her multimillionaire benefactor Daddy Warbucks made the sun shine once again around the world. Now Annie has come back to Matunik in a production that has many of the best aspects of the traditional Annie, with, unfortunately, some things that don't work quite as well as they should. So call this Annie a mixed blessing. Let's begin with the good stuff. The Annie I saw was Lauren Weintraub, the young lady who stepped in at the very last minute to take over the title role. A powerhouse, vocally and physically, she gave us an Annie less winsome than some, but definitely a hard-driving winner. The chorus of Little Girls, too, was first rate. As Warbucks, Todd Fenstermaker isn't the uproarious capitalist as some have played him, but he is quite real and wonderful as a tough guy falling fast for a charming child in need of his aid. He makes Warbucks a full human being. As that ever so nefarious con man supreme, Rooster Hannigan, Nathaniel Shaw is a fluid dancer and a funny scoundrel. Warbucks' gal Friday is played perfectly, nice and strong, by Margaret Lesser Robinson, and Greg London is a sweetheart as Drake, the butler with a heart. Second Story Theater's regular Tom Roberts is a terrific Franklin Delano Roosevelt, making the former president a powerful caretaker. Somehow, though, this Annie misses the mark several ways. The crowds on the streets of New York in the Warbuck Mansion seem sluggish without the brio that you usually see in Annie. The six-piece orchestra also seemed to be holding back, not finding the charge and lightness of the score. In the usually crowd-pleasing role of Miss Hannigan, that boozing, deeply unhappy, little girl-scaring monster of Annie's orphanage, Jan Newberger, a Broadway veteran, fails to catch the inherent humor that underlies and supports the nastiness. The result is a Miss Hannigan with a false sense of the attack and fear that usually compels audiences to love this nasty lady. So, this must go down as a mixed production. Director Richard Sibelico has captured well the real secret of the success of Annie, that sense of American optimism that propels the story despite its Depression-era downside. That, and the good performances, probably make it worth seeing. Unless, like me, you are a long-time Annie lover. Oh, P.S. The dog Sandy was wonderful.
This is Morning Edition on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Harrison. When temperatures rise in the summer, crime goes up, and young people are often the victims. A 12-year-old girl was the victim of a high-profile shooting at a graduation party in Providence this summer. More and more, teens are a factor in crime. Two teens are the suspect in a triple murder that happened last July in Providence's North End. As part of our series, Hot City Crime in Providence, I visited the North End and Smith Hill to find out what it's like to grow up in a high-crime area. Just inside the gates of the Chad Brown Housing Project, a dozen kids play tag around a blue and red playground. It's hot, close to 90 degrees, but none of them seem to notice. In the shade of a tree next to the playground, Balkis 10 cradles her tiny one-month-old baby and watches her 8-year-old son run around.
Right now, I don't have any concerns. We don't have any problems. I got 2 years here, and I got a boy, 8-year-old boy. The future for teenagers is not good.
She's right to be concerned. Last July, this area had more crimes than anywhere else in Providence, including 20 violent crimes. And teenagers who grew up around here say they've seen anything and everything, like Billy Ruin, an 18-year-old.
That's true. Really true. Like, fights, shootouts, drive-bys, all that stuff.
Ruin remembers the first time he witnessed a drive-by shooting. It was on Elmwood Street, and he was only 4 or 5 years old.
I was outside on Elmwood Street, and there was a drive-by. And then I was just standing there. I didn't know what to do.
What did you do?
I just went home and told my mom. She told me to stay inside.
Ruin is tall but slight and soft-spoken. He has a large tattoo peeking out from underneath a white V-neck T-shirt. It says, "Only God can judge me." Despite the tough tattoo, Ruin says he never felt drawn to gangs or crime. In fact, with everything he's seen on the streets, it was just the opposite.
I was always out doing stuff, not trying to get in trouble, because I know something bad would happen. I always kept that in mind, stay away from trouble, if possible.
To stay out of trouble, Ruin often plays basketball at the Madeline Rogers Recreation Center. On a recent evening, dozens of kids play basketball or go for a swim in the center's pool. Outside the rec center, Tu Patumahome from the Institute for the Study and Practice of Nonviolence greets kids as they arrive. He helped set up the rec night 7 years ago.
So we don't force people to do to do yoga. We don't force people to throw dodgeball at each other. We're just, hey, whatever you guys want to do, let us know. We'll make it happen for you guys. If they don't want to do nothing and just roam around and be peaceful, then that's fine with us too.
Staff at the Rec Night can help teenagers find a job or a GED program or return to high school. Batumahong will even arrange to take a kid to a court date or mediate a dispute, and he knows the risk of failure. He used to be one of these kids, and he ended up in a gang, running the streets, he calls it, later doing prison time. If he had his way, these kids would be in school all year long, or at least getting summer jobs.
You know, we just didn't have opportunities when I was young, so we just, caused havoc in the community. That's what happens at the end of the day.
A little way north of the rec center, children cool off in a water park, one of several around the city. This one on General Street is just steps from the site of a triple homicide that went down almost exactly a year ago. As she watches her grandchildren run in and out of the sprinklers, Angel Sweeney says she doesn't worry about their safety.
I think it's gotten better from my perspective. I mean, it used to be a time where all you ever heard was bad, 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 bad. But I think it's gotten better.
Sweeney lives nearby, and she brings kids from a summer day camp to play at this park. She tells a little girl to put away a plastic squirt gun. She doesn't allow guns of any kind, even if they're bright pink toys.
I think if it's not handled right, children might glorify what they see. And you can't say that's going to lead them to do bad, but children might get excited by that. They might tend to go towards that. That's why it's important that parents talk to them.
Sweeney says what worries her is how young people internalize the violence they see around them, sometimes in their own homes. And then there's the question of how those experiences may affect them when the summer ends and they go back to the classroom. Elizabeth Harrison, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Education reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation, and New England Institute of Technology's Center for Technology and Industry.
Dave and Larry, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Let's start at the beginning. How did you two meet?
Well, we met in Maine. Dave had been living in Oklahoma and came back to pick up some things. He had a house up there, and I was living there. Although I was raised in the Midwest, I moved to Maine when I was 19 and lived there for a couple years before I met Dave, and it was a mutual friend that introduced us.
So after 36 years, you're finally going to tie the knot. What made you decide to do it?
It became legal.
And we've always wanted to do that. I think we've always felt that what we had was, in fact, a marriage. So we wanted to formalize it.
And give me some of the details. How did it happen? I mean, who proposed to who?
There wasn't really a proposal, per se.
I think it has just sort of always been between us the thing that we would do, given the chance, would be to marry.
There's always been some concern between the two of us about the rights and responsibilities of marriage. Inheritance rights, visitation in the hospital, property rights, taxation rights. We have always wanted to have that protection.
I think our friends and relatives have always treated us as though we're a couple. And it just seemed the natural thing to do to formalize it when it became legal to do that.
Dave sometimes says that he feels like when you fill out a form and it's, you have to check off married, single, divorced, whatever, it's always a lie to check off single. We haven't been single in 3.5 decades.
And it's true, as you point out, you know, there's the romantic side of it, and then there's this practical financial side of it, too.
A good friend of ours died in January in Florida, and his partner had to wait over 4 months to be able to claim his remains to then bring back to Rhode Island to be buried.
And I think a few years ago when Larry had to have his appendix out, the doctor treated me as though I was his next of kin. I mean, I really appreciated that, but he didn't have to do that. It's nice to know that that's a right now.
So let's talk about some of the more fun aspects of getting married. Tell me about your wedding plans.
Well, it's September 21st. The ceremony will be at our church here in town. Channing Memorial Church is a Unitarian church in Newport. Unitarian Universalist churches have for many years embraced gay members.
And the minister is going to perform the ceremony, and then we will have the reception at Ocean Cliff, which we're looking forward to. It's a nice place.
It's just a magnificent stone structure right on the Newport, on the waterfront over near Castle Hill, the lighthouse, and we fell in love with it from the start.
I'm speaking with Larry Bacon and Dave Burnett of Newport, who are planning to be among the first same-sex couples in Rhode Island to get married after a new law takes effect today. So tell me, have you had any difficulty at all booking services as you're planning your wedding? There was some talk that some catering businesses or florists might decide they wouldn't provide service for same-sex couples.
We were met with open arms wherever we went. And the people at the venues that we looked at just seemed thrilled to have us there. I haven't gotten any sense, talking with vendors like florists, this type of thing, that there would be any problem.
People have said to us, well, why didn't you just go to Massachusetts? I didn't really want to do that because then what are we going to do, park our benefits and rights at the border? I want to be married where I have made my life, are plugged into a community, where we're plugged into a church. Why would I want to go somewhere else?
We both agreed on that, you know.
Yeah. I'm curious, do you feel that there's a larger significance to being able to say, you know, in the place where you live, that you're married, you know, in addition to things like end of life or, you know, visitation rights in the hospital?
It's a whole different feeling. Every once in a while I think about it. We're actually going to be married. And that's so different from saying, he's my partner, you know, we're partner. That doesn't carry the same emotional feel.
And I've never cared for the term partner. And to me, it smacks of the Wild West. But it will be very meaningful for us to have a traditional ceremony like the rest of our families. And we have incredible support from our families.
So tell me, for this wedding, I mean, after 36 years that you've been together and now you're getting married, do you have anything special planned for either the wedding or the reception? For example, are you writing your own vows? Or
in place of vows that we have written, there's a song that we're going to have sung. We've hired a soloist, and he will basically sing the vows that we would like to be able to say to each other if we could get the words out without bawling or something. And I'll walk beside you.
Yeah, it's an older song, not that popular or familiar, but it says it just right. I can't think of the words now, but it's various stages of life. You know, I'll walk beside you now, I'll walk beside you in the future, and through storm and trial. And then at the end it says, I'll walk, do you remember the words? I'll walk beside you to the land of dreams or something like that.
Yeah. Sounds beautiful.
It is.
That's great. And then dinner and dancing. And
dinner and dancing. Yes. And it's not really what you'd call a traditional wedding by virtue of the fact that, you know, we're much older. But also one of our ushers is 91. The two flower girls are in their mid-80s. Of course, our siblings are older, 70s and 80s.
But other than the age of the participants, a pretty traditional ceremony planned, it sounds like.
It is pretty much. Yeah, there are some differences, but it's actually pretty traditional. We'll process in to organ music, not Here Comes the Bride.
Yeah.
In that sense, it'll be quite traditional.
And I realized that you really didn't have much time to throw this all together. And you mentioned, I mean, it takes some people a year or longer to plan a wedding.
Yeah.
It's not done yet. Yeah. Each week we have more and more that we have to do. This morning we met with the wedding planner at the church and got that kind of, some of that nailed down. We still have to order a cake. And we still have to hire a band.
And rent our tuxes.
And rent the tuxes and buy the rings. And Probably best I don't think too much about what we haven't done or I'll get panicky.
It's much more difficult and involved than I ever imagined. The detail is incredible, but we'll get through it.
Dave Burnett and Larry Bacon, congratulations to both of you, and we hope it's a wonderful wedding, and thanks for speaking with me today.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure.